I don't know a CEO who doesn't have a set of strategic priorities, that doesn't have a mission they're trying to achieve, and doesn't have mile markers in their head for what success looks like. And if you meet that one, you maybe don't want them in your portfolio. Like, if you're not going anywhere, why the hell would people follow you?
From Foundation Capital, this is B2B as CEO, the show about how to scale your enterprise startup and how to grow from founder to CEO. I'm Ashu Garg, general partner at Foundation Capital. For this episode, I go deep on a topic that many founders, especially first-time founders, obsess over but often get wrong: OKRs, objectives and key results. And there's literally no greater authority on this topic than my guest, Deidre Pucknut, CEO and co-founder of Workboard, the enterprise standard in OKR software. Deidre is one of the most methodical, intentional, and gutsy leaders we've ever had on the show. Many CEOs overdo or underdo OKRs. Listen to Deidre, and she'll show you how to do OKRs right.
So tell us a little bit about Workboard.
Yep. So Workboard's a SaaS company that helps organizations get aligned on their strategic priorities, adjust those as the market changes and as they learn, and drive ownership, accountability, and transparency on their progress towards them. Some people will call that OKRs. It's a little bit more than writing down your OKRs, right? It's actually driving the company and the business and its operating rhythm to the outcomes you're trying to achieve.
I mean, it's way more than the OKRs. I mean, OKRs is one tool, and sometimes it's a great tool. You know, I tell some of my companies that are super early, like, don't overdo OKRs. Like, having hundreds of OKRs in a 20-person company and no product, it's a lot of process for nothing. I think the real hard part for companies is, how do you drive alignment of goals, and how do you communicate priorities across the organization in a way that everyone's headed in the same direction?
Yeah. I think like to leave OKRs, the label, out of the mix, right? First, they're not all created equal, right? And they're definitely not all the same quality. And they, what happens when people hear the label, and it sounds like maybe that you might see that in your portfolio companies, you see the label and you think, I'm doing a process, check. And you stop thinking about the substance of the process, which is, okay, we're going to align our efforts on our strategy. And we're going to assume time is finite and capital is finite. So aligning our efforts is pretty important to how fast we achieve our strategy, right? And like, we all need that.
Everything you said makes a ton of sense. And it feels like the obvious number one priority for most CEOs. Mm-hmm. And yet most CEOs struggle with this.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Part of it might be a little bit of the founder mindset, which is you're just out there in front running a little bit faster than the team. And in your early days, you're probably making a set of assumptions that they're all right behind you. And they can read your mind from looking at the back of your head. And then you find out, oh, actually, I can't really read my mind. Also, my mind changes a lot. So even if they read it last month, it's not what I think this month, right? I think it's just a little bit of a growing up, waking up, realizing that you're going to grow the business with and through people, not through willpower and your speed alone, right?
The other thing, if I can interrupt, is, you know, I find that, you know, founders are spending 24/7 on the company. And most, even the most committed employees aren't necessarily 24/7. And so there's so many layers upon layers of implicit assumptions and implicit analysis that a founder has done. And more often than not all founders, but founders are very inductive in their thought process. So they jump to a conclusion, and how they got there is in their head, but it's not articulated explicitly. And for the team, it's like, I have no idea what's going on. Why is this the right priority? Or how do you make this leap of faith? Mm-hmm. And founders sort of need to slow down, as you said, but also find a way to make those assumptions explicit.
That's right. And they make a leap, they get to a new place, and they forget to tell people where the new place is. Yes. Not just how they got there. They just didn't even mention where there was, right? And then sometimes that goes wrong, right? Where founders get frustrated, like, hey, why aren't you guys like with me on this? Well, you forgot to tell us. You forgot to bring us along. And there, you see a tension, especially from, I'll say, 25 employees to 100. you can feel that tension a lot. It's really amplified if a company doesn't have a lot of cash. That pain, the founder's got an urge to move really quick and figure it out because they know cash on hand and they know their total opportunity. And so they're moving really fast thinking, wow, slowing down would be a disaster, without realizing that actually they are moving slow because they're not taking everybody with them. And that can be pretty tense, right? And I think the other thing is maybe they just never learned it anywhere.
Yeah. Right? So let's talk about this process of driving alignment. And I'll take companies in terms of employees, because I think it's really employees more than revenues that drives complexity here. So first 10 employees, my guess is it's relatively straightforward. The founding employees, everyone gets together every day for lunch or a daily stand-up, and everyone's in sync. Is that a fair statement, or are there any best practices for 0 to 10 as well?
I think to 10 employees, I think where the focus is, if you will, is how do we iterate on what our strategic priorities are? How do we actually focus on what those are, right? Those two things, like we're really aligned on them. And so when you're 10 people, alignment, iteration, and focus come for free. Everybody on that team is kind of pretty close to 724, right? Yep. And the ones that aren't 724 are still 618, and that's pretty damn good.
So now you go to 10 to 25. That's the next phase. Maybe 10 to
25. This is where I think you want to, where OKRs can be helpful. And I'll call OKRs a syntax. That is all. They're a syntax. And if we had a shared syntax, it's like, I'm going to write in one code language, you're going to write in another language. You know, our code's not going to be that good. It's going to be ugly. In this case, it's saying we're going to use a common set of definitions to describe our intentions. Those are the objectives. And to define what we think great looks like, those are the KR, the key results. And so if we have one language for that, it makes it a little easier for us to spot where we're not actually aligned, right? The other discipline that's, I think, is quite important as you get closer to 25 is the next 25 or 10 people you hired, they're thinking about their activity, what they're gonna do. And unless you show them how to think about the impact, not just the activity, and unless you have a language that you use at your company to describe impact of activity, you're gonna have a lot of activity and not quite enough impact, right?
Now, you know, you're 10 to 25, you're still relatively small. Everyone in the team sort of comes up with, you know, their OKRs. They have, you know, some of them will match, some will not.
Yeah.
How, for a CEO who, very often CEOs haven't managed 15, 20 people. Right. You know, they were either incredible engineers or running open source projects or sometimes managing small teams. I mean, not everyone's, you know, every serial entrepreneur has to be a first time entrepreneur as well.
Yeah.
So what advice would you have, tips and tricks for the CEO in this 10 to 25 phase?
Yep. So I think I'm not a fan of individual OKRs. I'm a fan of team objectives and defined results. And to me, a team, we're not aligning people. We're aligning on outcomes, right? And so just setting OKRs on, okay, we've got this squad that's working on figuring out what the onboarding journey is that would produce fastest time to value for new users, as an example.
Yep.
That includes our PM, our PMM, the CX person, right? They've set a set of OKRs. So everyone on that.
So these squads are cross-functional. They don't have to be organizational hierarchy, but they're aligned around a common purpose.
Exactly. And I mean, teams are the engine of value creation. Like, no engineer ships product alone. No seller closes a deal alone. So I think it's important to just say, we're not actually trying to get everybody has an OKR because you must have one. We're getting to, well, what are we organized around? What outcomes are we driving in this group of people who are working in concert to an outcome, right? That, I think, getting those articulated and clear means at 25 people, even at 50 people, maybe there are 7 OKRs in the company. And people are contributing to at least one, if not 2, of those OKRs. And they're a member of a team that's driving those outcomes. And clarity on that can surface where the dependencies are and make sure that there's not, this team didn't go off the rails and this team's still expecting that to happen. And, or worse, neither team knows what to expect from either team, right? And so I think it's still get them clear, get them explicit. And at that size, put them on whatever doc-oriented thing you're using, your wiki or whatever it is, or you're communicating. It, for first-time managers, what is the way I think about that syntax and even the rhythm of it is, it's a management framework.
Yep.
Right? Which is, okay, let's get really clear on what we're trying to do. And we get really clear. Everybody really understands it, which is your job in the part where most founders are really bad. Everybody understands it, right? So you get help making sure everybody understands. Yep. And then the second part is, okay, we're meeting. What are we talking about? Oh, let's use the framework. Let's talk about the things we said we were going to accomplish. And let's check in on whether we are or we aren't, what's in our way and so on. So it actually becomes, I think, a really handy framework for the operating rhythm, right? To drive accountability. Another thing that founders are not awesome at, and they probably think it's a bad word.
I think the thing I really liked about this was this, you know, really sort of structuring the OKRs around a team. As against around the organizational hierarchy, but because most often I see people having in a 25 person company, there's 25 OKRs at the bottom of the, you know, the leaf nodes, and then there's organizational team OKRs. And by the time you're done, it's just like, you know, a jumble of information that's impossible to process.
Yep. And when you get down to individuals are going to have OKRs, when you really, if you've lost the authenticity often, of the syntax in itself. Like what's a real key result, like an actual business outcome that any one person genuinely delivers? And what you end up is we have objectives for individuals with their big deliverables for the quarter.
Yep. It completely gets diluted and it ends up being a bunch of activity.
Yep.
Because you can't structure outcomes at the level of an individual engineer. And how does this change as you go beyond 100 employees? Because now there's managers of managers. You know, it's at the point where the CEO doesn't really know every employee anymore. You know, they may have met them here and there. Mm-hmm. What changes at 100 to 1,000?
Yeah, well, a lot in a bunch of different stages there. At 100, you can still kind of know everyone in a non-pandemic time. At 200, you can't, and pandemic definitely not. I think a couple things happen, and again, I think of it as framework, right? Which is a framework for your rising managers, probably you promoted them, right? And your incoming managers and directors, because at 200, you're adding a lot more of those. Yep. You're providing a common framework across every function for how we're gonna drive clarity on what we're trying to accomplish together, not separately. And that accomplished together part gets really hard around 200, really hard.
Why is that? Why is 200 the magic number?
I think it, and it may be pandemic that I'm seeing a bit more in this, but what you end up with is people whose world of conversation is only in their own team and their own function. At 100, you're still in the same building. You still see each other all the time. You see cross-functional. Doing a cross-functional event is easier.
Yep.
200, harder. And so your world shrinks to your function. Easy to think it's the whole world.
Clearer.
Yeah, yeah.
And you probably have also hired more managers from the outside who are more professional managers, and they tend to also naturally create more silos because they're worried about looking good and they're worried about...
Right. They drop straight into what they're going to do, right? And they have the activity plan and they can see what needs to happen, but they can't often see how that fits into the rest of the company. They don't even have any context yet on where the rest of the company is going. As the framework starts to be super important there, right? So drop in and you have instant understanding of what the strategic priorities are at the top of the house, what they are across all the functions and teams, and in our case, across all the squads that are groups of cross-functional people driving purposeful outcomes, right? And then how you plug in gets a whole lot easier. And then if you're leaders of functions or company, your ability to see where it doesn't plug is, like, it becomes crucial, really, and it's impossible to see that without, I think, a systematic approach here, right?
And some system and process,
you need a framework, and then now you need a platform, right? In the same way, at 200 people, you are no longer managing your pipeline in an Excel spreadsheet, right?
And so that's when they call you. That's when it's 1-800-DAYDREE.
I don't know, DAYDREE per se, but yes, yeah, we can be super helpful from that point forward. We have a set of coaching programs. OKR can skill building programs that can be super helpful for teams earlier. So don't need a system, but do want to have a framework, do want to use it to its fullest impact. And we have a whole set of come build your skill in that and be the person inside your company that builds that, if you will, operating rhythm and operating discipline.
We'll be right back.
If Albert Einstein had worked in human resources instead of quantum physics, he would have said that hiring is hard. Not as hard as the general theory of relativity, but way harder than the special theory of relativity. I mean, come on. It would have been obvious to an HR professional as brilliant as Einstein that getting the best people is the difference between being a great company and a mediocre one. That's why Einstein would have loved Eightfold. Eightfold is the most effective way for companies to identify promising candidates, engage talent, reach diversity goals, and retain top performers. Businesses using Eightfold's talent intelligence platform have been able to achieve 7 times higher candidate responses, 80% faster hiring cycles, and 60% lower cost to hire. That's why Eightfold would have been Einstein's favorite talent management tool, and that's why it should be yours too. Eightfold improves hiring. Visit eightfold.ai to learn more.
As you've seen, you know, some of these companies are going from 100 to 200. They're fast growing. They're literally adding 100 employees in 6 months.
Yeah.
And a lot changes in the company at that stage. So let's focus a little bit on that. Tell us some war stories. What worked and what didn't work?
I added 82 people in the last 100 days. Do you want my own war stories?
Yeah.
I don't know what they are yet. I haven't found the war. So I think we're doing okay at the moment, but the things that I see in that mix have a lot to do with communication breakdown. And where it starts to break down is at that point, you've got a bit more people on the e-staff, and they're a little more seasoned, right? They're a couple outside VPs maybe.
Yep.
At 100, at 200, a couple outside CXOs, right?
Yep.
They're measurement driven, and they can quantify the impact they're going to have and so on. But the rest of the org and lots of new people you hired are activity driven. And this tearing in the fabric starts to happen where you've got a set of people who promise the board outcomes, believe in the outcomes, and then you've got everybody else who's working on output. And you can't reconcile those two things or they don't add up. And I think that tearing without, again, really being mindful of what's the framework we're going to use to make sure that we actually have translated, localized the outcomes we expect here into the outcomes contributed from teams across the org. The next tear is between silos, right? Where on this side, we have a strategy to focus on these segments. Oh, but territories were assigned randomly based on zip code, right? Like, how do you inspect that? What's the dialogue you're having? How do you know you need to have the dialogue? Right, between those two stakeholders on, hey, the assumptions in our top level strategy, the assumptions those rest on are these segments are going to deliver this much revenue, which is going to enable us to do this much next year. And did those assumptions actually get plumb lined into the way those teams are running? And that's work. It is not an accident, right? And I think without real operating rhythm around that. And again, got a vocabulary we can both expect and inspect. Are we really doing what we said we would do? And if we're not, how do I go unblock? How do I go course correct? How do I slipstream people into the right path forward? Stop wasting their time and ours, right? That I think is the biggest at the kind of 200 level, a lot of activity, big set of promised outcomes. Right.
And very often things slow down, actually. Companies
going
faster, sure. They start to slow down.
For this reason.
There's the cost of coordination and the cost of miscommunication goes up pretty materially.
Okay. And fundamentally at that point, I think if you don't have a process for aligning on outcomes below the leadership team and the board, you are not aligned on them. And most companies have a big process for aligning between exec team and the board, getting aligned on the outcomes they're going to deliver. And then nobody ever sees that deck again, right? Until the next board meeting. But what they don't have is the same kind of process and handshakes through the org to say, actually, we have all our execution powers also aligned on the outcomes that we believe in. And you got to be intentional about it. It's not coming for free.
So what are some of the things people can do? Are there particular, you know, meetings that you would suggest that at the 100 employee mark, people sort of put in place?
I think tips and tricks. Part of that cadence, or if you think about it, I'll call it operating rhythm, and then what's the cadence? Yeah. And what are we inspecting when? Biggest insight would be inspect the data on its natural rate of change. If we take our eye off the ball for a week, can we recover? Yep. We take it off for 2 weeks, can we recover? Yep. Okay, we can look at that one monthly. If we take our eye off the ball for a week and we can we recover? No. Okay, weekly cadence, right? And I would just connect.
That's a great insight. So the cadence varies depending on the nature of the business. So if you have 6 month sales cycles, they're probably okay with monthly cadences. If you have more of a consumer oriented, sort of a consumer services, you almost need daily or weekly cadences.
Exactly. Right. And so what's the natural rate of change and your risk in change in the data? And then what's the cadence of those meetings? So you might have, and the next thing is to think through what should we look at which elevation? What's the senior leadership team need to look at? What's, I'll call it the extended E staff, which is the senior and maybe the VPs and directors who have operating responsibilities. What do they need to look at? What's the cadence and pace of that? I do think it's very segment specific. Like what's your sales model, route to market has a lot, I think, to do with that, right? On how often you're meeting. And
for example, let's take a typical enterprise software business where sales cycles are probably somewhere between 3 to 6 months.
Yeah.
The median sales cycle is in that zip code. Yeah. How often would this be?
I think that senior leadership team is meeting every week and they're meeting on the overarching OKRs, the whole business, because there's product that we need to ship. There's CX stuff we need to do. There's onboarding, right? And they're looking at the leading indicators, not the end of quarter outcomes, right? And it's detection. What needs our attention, right? And if nothing, great. I think every 2 or every 3 weeks, it's the next extended team. And they're looking at the OKRs at the layers below that, and particularly the cross-functional squad OKRs that may be about launching this, reimagining that, whatever that set of cross-functional things are that are next peg down from company outcomes. And again, how do we remove the roadblocks? Where's the friction in the pace? I also put recruiting in my weekly SLT meeting. So I'm looking at the recruiting pipeline. How many candidates do we need in the pipe? How many interviews do we need to do to hit this target? And we're looking at candidate and interviews every week, which is how I got to 82 people in a quarter. Right? And if I took my eye off the ball for a week, we would not have made the number, right? So there might be a set of things that I'll call them not about company strategies, but are orthogonal or horizontal that are necessary for where we land next quarter.
Yeah, the enablers, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And that could be recruiting. It also might be things that relate to customer experience. It might be related to performance or scaling, a set of things that are preconditions for following quarter that require high attention and touch many people across the org. Those you want to either do SLT or the layer below SLT on the natural cadence. So your agenda for the meetings, focusing on things based on the interval at which you've got to focus on that data to optimize what you accomplish in a quarter.
That makes sense.
One-on-ones are giant. One-on-ones. Yeah. Those are the game change in the universe.
Do you think the CEO should do skip level one-on-ones, two levels down? What would your advice be?
Sure, you need to do your own. The CEO must have one-on-ones with their team. And I think it's every week. Don't shortchange what your team needs from you to be successful. And don't shortchange the listening you need to do with them. Everyone does one-on-ones. It's like uniform. And of course, one-on-ones are in work board. Your OKRs are already on the agenda. Your topics are carried from last week to this week. Last week's decisions are still there. The app is kind of your chief of staff on that. Those one-on-ones are, I think, incredibly important. The private conversation is so much different in texture than the group and the team conversation.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, and it's very hard for founders to do. I mean, the one-on-ones seem the most dispensable thing on their calendar, I find. Yeah.
But I think when you get a bit bigger, they seem like indispensable. It's like a transitional thing, in part because if you hired really great CXOs, you have more time because they're doing more of the job. You got to fire yourself from marketing and fire yourself from sales and fire yourself from finance and all those things, right? You actually get capacity there. Yeah. And so then the one-on-one becomes, are we actually still aligned from our last conversation, right? And now you need to work through them, not around them and not despite them. And for that reason, skip levels, I don't like to call them skip level one-on-ones. I do love to do things like donut dates and meetups on small groups on different topics. I love agenda-less happy hours with one or two people.
Yeah, because the skip levels are not intended to, they're more for cultural and organizational reasons than they are for, you know,
yeah. Running and the then business. Even the label skip level says, okay, we have to have, you have to prepare and I have to be inspecting and versus, hey, Friday, 3:30, you can book this time. We'll do a happy hour together, agenda-less. And some people just want to talk about their dog and their kids. And some people want to say, I'm kind of worried about this. Can you, right? But I like being accessible. I don't like the, let me make sure, right? That part.
I like that. I like that distinction. I think that's a great distinction to have. Now, one of the things I find with people who go down the path of OKRs, they sort of have a checkbox of, I've got to have a people OKR. I've got to have this. I've got to have, you know, I remember a company I had, you know, there's 20 employees and there was this whole OKR around, you know, culture. Uh-huh. And I'm like, we're too small to even know what our culture is yet. Right. We've only been in existence for 90 days.
Yeah.
In that case, I think it was 4 months, something like that.
Yeah. It's too much.
What advice do you have for founders?
That's what I can tell you. Right. Even if OKRs did not cause that problem. All they did, and this is, I think, super important. All they did was show you that that problem existed.
Makes sense.
That founder and that team, they were sitting around talking about culture too much already, right? When they wrote it down, you could see it. But they were already thinking, oh, shouldn't we be talking about culture? I mean, I'm on Twitter. It looks like we're supposed to talk about that all the time, right? They were already wasting time there. And you can now spot it. I think this is actually, when you see teams doing OKRs wrong, or they have too many, or they listen, it actually presents an opportunity.
Surface issues. Yeah.
Yeah, not to throw out OKRs, but to say, OKRs have just done their job. They have shown me how people are thinking. And I'm going to use that data, not cut myself off from that data, right? Which is a counterintuitive thing, right? Where CEOs will say, my team puts like dumb things in their OKRs. Can you know, I think OKRs are broken. Like, I think you need to have a different one-on-one with your team member. Like the quality of thinking is actually where you, leader, you step in and do some coaching, right? The OKR is just telling you they don't know where to go.
Makes sense.
If they have 90 KRs, it's telling you they don't know how to
prioritize. They don't have clarity. Yeah, they don't have clarity on what the goals are. They don't have clarity on what the key results are.
Yep. And so instead of OKRs are broken, it's they did their job. They tell me what I needed to know to raise our game.
That's it for this episode. You can find past episodes and subscribe to future ones on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. B2B as CEO is brought to you by Foundation Capital, an early stage venture capital firm with 27 IPOs, including Netflix, Lending Club, TubeMogul, and Sunrun. I'm Ashu Garg, a general partner at Foundation Capital. I'm passionate about helping B2B entrepreneurs who are trying to solve hard problems. So if this podcast speaks to you, if you're interested in growing from a technical founder into a business leader, drop me a line. Thanks, and see you next time.